ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सारिवं जगने नष्टे धर्म कर्म विवर्जिता उपेक्षिताश्च साधनैः चिन्तमपादरचयम् स हि एवं तस् जवने when his property nashte was lost, dharma religiosity, karma and sense enjoyment, vivarajitaha devoid of, upekshita neglected, cha and svajanai by his family members, chintam anxiety. Appa he obtained durachayam insurmountable. Translation: finally, when his property was completely lost, he who never engaged in religiosity or sense enjoyment became ignored by his family members. Thus he began to feel unbearable anxiety. Tashivam jayato dhirgam nastarayas tapasvina kijyata vaspikantasya nirveda sumahannabhut. Having lost all his wealth, he felt great pain and lamentation. His throat choked up with tears, and he meditated for a long time on his fortune. Then a powerful feeling of renunciation came over him. Purport: the Brahmana had previously been trained in pious life, but his past goodness was covered by his offensive behavior. Finally, his previous purity was reawakened within him. So today also is the disappearance day of Srila Rupa Goswami. So we're also going to read a little bit about Srila Rupa Goswami, and as we go through some of the texts about Rupa Goswami, we can discuss the significance of today's verse as well as it comes up. So first is a little summary. There's a little summary here in the Adi Leela, Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela, about Rupa Goswami and his brothers, Sri Sanatan and Anupam. So this is from Adi Leela, chapter 10, text number 84. Anupama Vallabha Sirupa Sanatana Etina Sukha Vikshira Paschime Sarvottama. On the western side were the 43rd, 44th and 45th branches, Sri Sanatan, Sri Rupa and Anupam, and they were the best of all. So here, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, who is a disciple of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, he is describing the principal followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he's describing here that among them, the best of all is Sri Sanatan, Sri Rupa and Anupam. Purport. Sri Anupam was the father of Srila Jiva Goswami and youngest brother of Sri Sanatan Goswami and Srila Rupa Goswami. Because of working in the Mohammedan government, these three brothers were given the title Mulik. Our personal family is connected with the Muliks of Mahatma Gandhi Road in Calcutta, and we often used to visit their Radha Govinda temple. They belong to the same family as we do. Our family Gotra, or original genealogical line, is the Gautama Gotra, or line of disciples of Gautama Muni, and our surname is Dev. But due to their accepting the post of zamindars in the Mohammedan government, they received the title Mulik. Similarly, Rupa, Sanatan and Vallabha were also given the title Mulik. Mulik means Lord. Just as the English government gives rich and respectable persons the title Lord, so the Mohammedans give the title Mulik to rich, respectable persons that have intimate connections with the government. The title Mulik is found not only among the Hindu aristocracy, but also among Mohammedans. This title is not restricted to a particular family, but is given to different families and castes. The qualifications for receiving it are wealth and respectability. So Rupa, Sanatan and Anupam were given the title Mulik because of their association with the Mohammedan government. So Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami belong to the Bharadvaj Gotra, which indicates that they belonged either to the family or disciplic succession of Bharadvaj Muni. As members of the Krishna consciousness movement, we belong to the family or disciplic succession of Sarasvati Goswami. That's Sri Bhakti Sarasvati. And thus we are known as Sarasvatas. Obeisances are therefore offered to the spiritual master as Sarasvata Deva, or a member of the Sarasvata family, Namaste Sarasvati Deva, whose mission is to broadcast the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gauravani Pracharamani, and to fight with the impersonalists and voidists. Nidavisesh Sunyavadi Pastachar Deshitarani. This was also the occupational duty of Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Anupam Goswami. Hmm. Any respectable family has a very strong tradition by which they maintain their wealth and aristocracy. And the family usually takes great pride in some particular calling. So we belong to the Sarasvata family, and our mission is to broadcast the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and fight with the impersonalists and voidists. So the genealogical table of Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami and Vallabha Goswami can be traced back to the 12th century Sukhavda, when a gentleman of the name Saravagya appeared in a rich and opulent Brahmana family in the province of Karnataka. He had two sons named Anuruddha Rupeshvara and Harihara, who were both bereft of their kingdoms and thus obliged to the resident to reside in the highlands. The son of Rupeshvara, who was named Padmanabha, moved to a place in Bengal known as Naihati on the bank of the Ganges. There he had five sons, of whom the youngest, Mukunda, had a well-behaved son named Kumaradev, who was the father of Rupa, Sanatan and Vallabha. Kumaradev lived in Bakalachandravid, which was in the district of Yashodhara and is now known as Paichabad. Of his many sons, three took to the path of Vaishnavism. Later, Sri Vallabha and his eldest brothers, Sri Rupa and Sanatan, came from Chandradvip to the village of Malda district of Bengal, known as Ramakeli. It is in this village that Srila Jiva Goswami took birth, accepting Vallabha as his father. Because of engaging in the Mahavatan government, the three brothers received the title Muluk. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the village of Ramakeli, he met Vallabha there. Later, Sri Rupa Goswami, after meeting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, resigned from the government service, and when he went to Vrindavan to meet Lord Chaitanya, Vallabha accompanied him. The meeting of Rupa Goswami and Vallabha with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Allahabad is described in Madhya Leela chapter 19. Actually, it is to be understood from the statement of Sanatana Goswami that Sri Rupa Goswami and Vallabha went to Vrindavan under the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. First, they went to Mathura, where they met a gentleman named Subuddhi Roya, who maintained himself by selling dry fuel wood. He was very pleased to meet Sri Rupa Goswami and Anupam, and he showed them the 12 forests of Vrindavan. Thus, they lived in Vrindavan for 1 month, and then again went to search for Sanatan Goswami. Following the course of the Ganges, they reached Allahabad or Prayag Tirtha, but because Sanatan Goswami had come there by a different road, they did not meet him there. And when Sanatan Goswami came to Mathura, he was informed of the visit of Sri Rupa Goswami and Anupam by Subuddhi Roya. When Rupa Goswami and Anupam met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Benares, they heard about Sanatana Goswami's travels from him, and thus they returned to Bengal, adjusted their affairs with the state, and on the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, went to see Lord Chaitanya at Jagannath Puri. In the year 1436, Akabda, the youngest brother Anupam, died and went back home back to Godhead. He went to the abode in the spiritual sky where Sri Ramchandra is situated. At Jagannath Puri, Sri Rupa Goswami informed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of this incident. Vallabha was a great devotee of Sri Ramachandra, therefore he could not seriously consider the worship of Radha Govinda according to the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yet he directly accepted Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ramchandra. In the Bhakti Ratnakara, there is the following statement. Vallabha was given the name Anupam by Sri Guru Sundara, but he was always absorbed in the devotional service of Lord Ramchandra. He did not know anyone but Sri Ramchandra, but he knew that Chaitanya Goswami was the same Lord Ramchandra. In the Guru Ganadesha Dipika, Srila Rupa Goswami is described to be the gopi named Sri Rupa Manjari. In the Bhakti Ratnakara, there is a list of the books Srila Rupa Goswami compiled. Of all his books, the following 16 are very popular among Vaishnavas: Hamsa Duda, Uddhava Sandesh, Krishna Janmatiti Vidhi, Ganadesha Dipika Brihat, and Lagu, Stava Malla, Vidagda Madhava, Lalita Madhava, Dana Kelly Kamudi, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and the most celebrated book of Srila Rupa Goswami, Ujjvala Nilamani, Akyata Chandrika, Mathura Mahima, Pajavali, Nataka Chandrika, and Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Sri Rupa Goswami gave up all family connections, joined the renounced order of life, and divided his money, giving 50% to the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and 25% to his kutumbas, family members, and keeping 25% for personal emergencies. He met Haridas Thakur in Jagannath Puri, where he also met Lord Chaitanya and his other associates. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to praise the handwriting of a Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami could compose verses according to the desires of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by his direction he wrote two books named Lalita Madhava and Vidagdha Madhava. Lord Chaitanya desired the two brothers, Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami, to publish many books in support of the Vaishnava religion. When Sanatan Goswami met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Lord advised him to go to Vrindavan. And Sri Sanatan Goswami is described in the Guru Gana Dishadipika. He was formerly known as Rati Manjari or sometimes Labanga Manjari. So then there's a little description there of Sanatan Goswami. So then continues a little bit here, a little bit more detail about the how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made arrangements for the brothers to leave the government service and to become the original Hare Krishna devotees. In the Majjalila chapter 19, the device adopted by Sanatana Goswami to get free from the government service is described. He served a notice of sickness to the Nawab, the Muslim governor, but actually he was studying Srimad Bhagavatam with Brahmanas at home. The Nawab received information of this through a royal physician, and he immediately went to see Sanatana Goswami to uncover his intentions. The Nawab requested Sanatana to accompany him on an expedition to Orissa, but when Sanatana Goswami refused, the Nawab ordered that he be imprisoned. When Rupa Goswami left home, he wrote a note for Sanatana Goswami informing him of some money that he had entrusted to a local grocer. Sanatana Goswami took advantage of this money to bribe the jail keeper and get free from detention. Then he left for Benares to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, bringing with him only one servant whose name was Ishan. On the way they stopped at a sarai or hotel, and when the hotel keeper found out that Ishan had some golden coins with him, he planned to kill both Sanatan and Ishan and to take away the coins. Later Sanatan Goswami saw that although the hotel keeper did not know them, he was being especially attentive to their comfort. Therefore he concluded that Ishan was secretly carrying some money and that the hotel keeper was aware of this and therefore planned to kill them for it. Upon being questioned by Sanatan Goswami, Ishan admitted that he indeed had money with him, and immediately Sanatan Goswami took the money and gave it to the hotel keeper, requesting him to get them through the jungle. Thus, with the help of the hotel keeper, who was also the chief of the thieves of that territory, he crossed over the Hazipur Mountains, which are presently known as the Hazaribaghs. He then met his brother-in-law, Sri Kanta, who requested that he stay with him. Sanatan Goswami refused, but before they parted, Sri Kanta gave him a valuable blanket. Somehow or another, Sanatan Goswami reached Varanasi and met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at the house of Chandrasekhara. By the order of the Lord, Sanatan Goswami was cleanly shaven, and his dress changed to that of a mendicant or Babaji. He put on old garments of Tapana Mishra and took prasad at the house of a Maharashtra Brahmanan. Then, in discourses with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Lord himself explained everything about devotional service to Sanatan Goswami. He advised Sanatan Goswami to write books on devotional service, including a book of directions for Vaishnava activities, and to excavate the lost places of pilgrimage in Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him blessings to do all this work and also explained to Sanatan Goswami the import of the Atmaramba verse from 61 different angles of vision. Sanatan Goswami went to Vrindavan by the main road, and when he reached Mathura he met Subhuti Roya. Then he returned to Jagannath Puri through Jarikanda the Uttar Pradesh jungle. At Jagannath Puri, he decided to give up his body by falling down beneath the wheel of the Jagannath Rath, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saved him. Then Sanatana Goswami met Haridas Thakur and heard about the disappearance of Anupam. Sanatana Goswami later described the glories of Haridas Thakur. Sanatana observed the etiquette of Jagannath's temple by going through the beach to visit Lord Chaitanya, although it was extremely hot due to the sun. He requested Jagannath Pandit to give him permission to return to Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu praised the character of Sanatana Goswami and he embraced Sanatana, accepting his body as spiritual. Sanatana Goswami was ordered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to live at Jagannath Puri for 1 year. When he returned to Vrindavan after many years, he again met Rupa Goswami and both brothers remained in Vrindavan to execute the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The place where Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami formerly lived has now become a place of pilgrimage. It is generally known as Gupta Vrindavan or Hidden Vrindavan, and it is situated about 8 miles south of Imrejabajara. The following places are still visited: the temple of Sri Madana Mohan Deity, the Kali Kandamba tree under which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Sanatana Goswami at night, and Rupa Sagara, a large pond excavated by Srila Rupa Goswami. A society named Ramakali Samskara Samiti was established in 1924 to repair the temple and renovate the pond. There's a summary of the life of Rupa Goswami and of course his brother Sanatana. Their life history is in somewhat there are some parallels with our Brahmana and we're discussing in the Srimad Bhagavatam in that they appeared to come from a very good Brahmana position and yet had fallen away from that situation. And in another sense, the Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami also epitomize or symbolize the situation of many people who come to Krishna consciousness in Kali Yuga. Many people come from a background where they're considered fallen, in unfortunate situation where they're not following any strict religious principles. Somehow, due to bad association, due to from family members or being forced by governments, most people in Kali Yuga are engaged in all sorts of activities which are considered to be abominable or not very good. So Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they actually were in a similar situation. So here we see that sometimes in various religions, especially those that are manufactured or they're not actually bona fide religions, even some of the bona fide religions, you find that the saintly persons upon which the entire religion is based, it is very, very hard to find, actual separate the truth from the legend or the myth. So, we see that especially with some of the major religions of today. If we look at Christianity, very hard for people to understand. Many people don't even accept that Jesus and it actually existed. Although, you know, and therefore archaeologists and, you know, historians try very, very hard to substantiate, yes, there are documents and, you know, there's no way that you can, you know, deny that he existed. The difficulty is, of course, is that when those persons, about, I think it's a few hundred years after, you know, the advent of Jesus, they wanted to write the history of Jesus by almost making him like a personality that just sort of descended from heaven. So they wanted to divest him of any political background, divest him of any mundane relationships. So in one sense, you know, they wanted to just really remove the history of Jesus so that the only history that was available was almost some person who's just, you know, descended from heaven and is really not connected with anything going on. So in doing this, of course, they made it very difficult for themselves. Many myths and legends were actually created. And of course, ultimately, we see now that, and the same with Muhammad, who, you know, wasn't so long ago, but the difficulty is many people lose faith because they can't quite substantiate, you know, what is the actual fact of this saintly person. You know, what did he actually do and what did he actually say? And therefore, knowing what he actually did and what he actually said, you know, we can derive some significance. But if someone is telling us that Jesus did this and Muhammad did this and this one did that, and we can't even substantiate, did he even do this, did he even say that, is that, you know, was that his mood when he said that? You know, none of these things can be substantiated, because there was actually an attempt to remove certain information because, you know, one, some of the people who were actually writing the history of these saintly persons didn't actually believe in their divinity. And therefore, if they found something that was contradictory or difficult to understand, they would remove it. you know, there's a big controversy, of course, about whether Jesus was married. So, you know, there's many evidences in the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Nag Hammadi Scrolls and so many things like that, that he was married. And, you know, when they look at the tradition, the Jewish tradition, of course, which, you know, Jesus was practicing the Jewish tradition, it was unheard of for a priest not to be married. You know, they considered it unusual in those days, and it was almost you had to be married to be a practicing priest, otherwise they thought, you know, you would get into some difficulty and then it would cause all sorts of trouble. So we see, you know, that even in our time, you know, great saintly persons like Narottam Das Thakur, who is, you know, recognised as being a very elevated, great saintly person, and still, you know, great attempts were made that he was married, because it is, you know, for various reasons, they want that, you know, here is a great saintly person. How wonderful it would be if his line continued and were trained and, you know, for so many different reasons, for, you know, proper social etiquette and what have you. So there's a big controversy. Of course, those who thought that, well, if Jesus is, you know, we're trying to make him a divinity and he's married, it doesn't make him look very divine. It makes him look mundane, so we better chop that out of the history and, you know, if he did this and did that. So in this way, apart from that, of course, there was huge competition that, you know, our God can do this. Oh, that's okay. Well, Jesus can do this as well. But there is a lot of, you know, the other thing, of course, is that, you know, people of the day, many of them were, you know, may have worshipped the sun god, or, you know, in which their sacred day was Sunday, and I think the Jewish day is, and holy day was Saturday or something. So, you know, in order to amalgamate, you know, the various religions of the day with Christianity, you know, things were changed and mixed around so that, you know, the sun god, you know, worshippers were happy and this one were happy. So in this way, the problem is that all the, you know, what is fact and what is fiction, it just become completely blurred. And many historical facts were completely, you know, purposely removed. And still to this very day, you know, historical facts are being hidden and covered because people, you know, who follow a particular faith and protecting it cannot properly understand the nature of spiritual life. Here we see that, you know, in Krishna consciousness movement, that, you know, we don't hide the fact that Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, although in very, you know, elevated Brahmana families, that they were associating with Muslims. Not that there's anything wrong with the Muslim, but it was certainly against the Hindu, you know, many of their principles that, you know, eating of meat and, you know, certain other things. Of course, the Muslim ruler at that time was particularly interested in conquering other countries. You know, therefore, there's a certain amount of killing and, you know, taking others' you know, possessions and like this. So, you know, it's quite materialistic, just developing his own power and prestige. So, of course, for a saintly person to be associated with someone, to be serving someone who's, you know, regularly going and killing and, you know, what have you, and engaged in all sorts of nefarious activities and irreligious activities according to, you know, perhaps the Aryan tradition, you know, they were considered quite fallen. So this fact is not hidden. In fact, it is an essential part of the history which needs to be understood, because although we understand gradually through the various scriptures, through the various saintly persons, through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, that Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were actually residents from the spiritual world, manjaris, they performed this particular pastime in order to show how the Krishna consciousness movement can take anyone from any position and does not discriminate upon against one's background and will elevate that person to the highest transcendental position of spiritual life. So this we see through the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had descended himself personally in order to distribute his Sankirtan movement and to give the opportunity for anyone without discrimination that, oh no, you are fallen, or, you know, you are this, you are that, no, you can't come. No, without any discrimination, Lord Chaitanya was giving the opportunity to become purified, to become elevated to the highest platform of spiritual level, where one has full control of the mind, full control of the senses, Goswami, and fully Krishna conscious, fully aware of the Supreme Lord, and therefore eligible to return to the spiritual world and to become fully versed in all the confidential scriptures of the Lord. So Lord Caitanya's movement is like that. It will take anyone from any position and elevate them to the highest position. Of course, when the Lord appears, only the most fortunate souls, in essence, will join with him as his dear friends and eternal associates, literally to enact these pastimes. So therefore, when the Lord comes, he actually brings with him different resonants from the spiritual world, and they perform these pastimes with him. So Rupa Goswami, who is Rupa Manjari in the spiritual world, he appeared in order to perform this pastime with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So of course, when we say Rupa Manjari, what we're saying is that in the spiritual world, because we're in the material world now, and the material world is maintained by the Lord's expansion as Lord Vishnu. So Vishnu is the Lord's expansion who looks after the material world. Vishnu has no business in the spiritual world. But he is not different from the Lord, but he looks after the material world. Lord Vishnu expands from one of the features of Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan has four expansions as Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna and Iruda. And Vishnu, Mahavishnu, expands from the Sankarshan feature of Narayan. So Narayan, he does have activities and his affairs are always concerned with the spiritual world. And in the spiritual world, in Vaikuntha, there are unlimited spiritual planets with different forms of Narayan, where devotees can worship the Lord in unlimited variety of ways. Actually, I was looking, Gangeshvara is the name of Lord Vishnu. It's also a name of Lord Shiva. Gangeshvara is the name of Lord Vishnu, which means that the Lord who has unlimited variety of devotees and accepting unlimited variety of devotional service. So, in his feature as Lord Narayan, he has many different forms, such as Lord Ramchandra. Generally, in Vaikuntha Loka, one associates with the Lord, understanding that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is a mood of serving the Lord with awe and reverence. In Vaikuntha, one of the higher realms, spiritual planetary realms of Vaikuntha is the planet of Lord Ramchandra, where the opportunity to serve the Lord, still the awe and reverence is there, but there's a beginning of friendship. So there's something a little special. But above Vaikuntha Loka, there is Krishna Loka, and Krishna Loka has three divisions. There is Mathura, there is Dwarka Mathura, and Vrindavan. There, the sweet one worships the Lord in more confidential relationships. There is more intimacy, and therefore the relationships with the Lord is sweeter. And in fact, the mood of the devotees who worship the Lord in Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan in the spiritual world is more and more intense in those different abodes, and more sweeter. In Vaikuntha, one can have a neutral relationship with the Lord, which is eternal, but it's not as intense. One always enjoys being in the same abode of the Lord, although one may not always be intensely hankering to personally be with him and to personally serve the Lord. But in the higher realms, the intensity of the devotee's relationship is much more heightened, and they cannot be without the association of the Lord for a moment, and they want to offer their service in a relationship which is very confidential and very sweet. So in Dwarka, that sweet relationship is there, and therefore there's the opportunity to serve the Lord in the mood of not only neutrality, but servitorship, friendship, and maternal relationship, where one actually becomes in a parental mood with the Supreme Lord, almost looking after the Lord instead of the Lord maintaining everyone else. That's the mood. And there is also the conjugal mood, such as the queens of Dwarka, and in that mood they have a conjugal relationship with the Supreme Lord, as in Dwarka, that they have the mood that the Lord is their husband. So as we go from Dwarka, Mathura to Vrindavan, the restrictions of awe and reverence to the Lord reduce, and the confidentiality increases, and the sweetness of that relationship increases, and the intensity of that relationship increases. So therefore in Vrindavan, the awe and reverence for the Supreme Lord is completely absent. There is the mood of sweet, confidential, intimate relationships completely covers any concept of here is God, and completely covers that mood of awe and reverence. And therefore, because there is no crippling of one's activities with the Supreme Lord, just like when you have a very close friend, you can say things to a really close confidential friend that you cannot say to anyone else. And you know that whatever you say, it's kept in confidence. They never take it the wrong way. They always take it in a good way. You can push each other around. You can take liberties. You can, crack jokes at that person's expense. Make fun of that person, they will just laugh with you like this. But as soon as if that friendship is with someone who's somehow in a higher respectable position, immediately all of those activities are crippled. So in Vrindavan, there is no crippling effect at all. The relationship with the Lord is just so, there's no concept that here is the Lord, it is here is my friend, here is my lover, like this. Here's this darling, Krishna, that we are looking after, or who is, looking after us in one sense. So, just like the monkeys, the monkeys are coming, and Krishna is giving them yogurt, so he's looking after them. But, there's no awe and reverence for the monkeys, they'll just play with Krishna freely, but they. So in this way, all the residents of Vrindavan have that act. And on the platform of conjugal love, the mood is one of that the not married Krishna, the gopis of Vrindavan. The gopis of Vrindavan, they have a mood that there is a certain element of risk involved, and separation, a certain element of separation due to the arrangement of Krishna's spiritual energy. And therefore, they're like girlfriends. And of course, the gopis of Vrindavan, they are actually expansions of Krishna's own spiritual pleasure potency. In the spiritual world, the gopis are actually Krishna's spiritual energy. They're not ordinary. There is no trace of any material energy at all in the spiritual world. So we should be very careful not to think of them as we may think of boyfriend and girlfriend in this world. So the gopis, they have the most freedom in their relationship, the most intimacy, where they embrace and kiss the Lord as lovers. That is in a different mood than the queens of Dwarka. The queens of Dwarka are quite respectful, more respectful in the sense that a wife is with her husband. Here in the Vrindavan, there is a mood of being attracted, the lover and the beloved for the first time. One of the natures of the spiritual world, and which is especially prevalent in Vrindavan, is that every time Krishna and his associates meet, they consider that it's just like the first time. So although the past times are eternal, when the gopis meet with Krishna, it is just like a lover meeting with the lover for the first time. That is the nature of the spiritual energy. So these ever fresh pastimes are there. So the gopis have young assistants, and they are known as manjaris. Those manjaris, they enjoy the conjugal mood of Krishna and his gopis through their association with Krishna and the gopis by assisting Krishna and the gopis in their various pastimes. So Rupa Goswami, he is Srimad Radharani, of course, is the full manifestation of the spiritual energy. And her first two expansions are Lalita and Vishakha. And Lalita's foremost Manjari assistant is Rupa Manjari. So so this is our Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari. So we can only imagine how fortunate we are that this is our acharya. So Rupa Manjari and many other of the principal gopis and principal cowherd boys and other associates of the Lord, they descended with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in order to inaugurate the Sankirtan movement, to start it, and to show the principles upon which it is based. And therefore, although Rupa Manjari is very elevated eternal resident Nitya Siddha devotee within the spiritual world, in the highest, topmost Krishna Loka, he, along with his brother, who's Rati Manjari, they enacted the pastime of being very, very fallen devotees in order to show that Lord Chaitanya's movement is meant to deliver the most fallen. So therefore we don't hide the fact that Rupa Goswami come from this background. It actually makes Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement more glorious. We don't hide the fact that Rupa Goswami was a politician. Or, you know, a pounds and shillings man. You know, someone that they had the there was Sakira Malik and W. Kass. Those titles meant that one is the chief minister and the other one is the chief treasurer. I forget which one, but so you know they were very practical. They dealt with all the political affairs of managing the kingdom. You know, so they dealt with all the mundane affairs. And again, it's something that's not hidden that you know somehow or another they should be someone who's has no history of you know any mundane dealings or what have you. But we see that when Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, when they were in Vrindavan and had later taken sannyas, that the people of Vrindavan, the family people of Vrindavan, whenever there was some family quarrel, not always, but you know, if there was something that was a little hard to resolve between husband and wife, they would ask, you know, Rupa or Sanatan to come and settle the matter. You know, there's a quarrel between the husband and wife, mm-hmm. and they ask the you get the Goswami and you come and settle our family dispute. But they knew that Rupa and Sanatan, they were so practical and so you know, so much able to relate to person's position, because they've spent, you know, a good part of their life dealing with all these things. And therefore, they understood, you know, that they, it's not like their Goswamis, you know, how will they understand what goes on in family life, you know, or how will they even be interested in our family life? But no, they would, you know, they were happily, and they understood that whatever they say, then that accepted, that decision will accept like that. So, and we see also that, you know, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, you know, very well read, that they knew, you know, they knew various languages. They could speak, you know, and write in Persian, and, you know, I don't know all the languages, but, you know, there's three or four different languages that they knew, as well as, of course, the Sanskrit. So they could relate to people from all different walks of life. So, in this way, again, it is showing that in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, you know, we should not have a you know, false stereotyped understanding of who is a sadhu and who is not. You know, as we explained in the beginning of the class, some religions, in trying to take their saints and remove literally their setting within the material world, have actually done their religion great harm by creating an artificial scenario. Therefore, it means that no one else can come to that platform, because everyone else feels, well, you know, here is, you know, Jesus, here is Muhammad, you know, they're these personalities, no one else can become a saint, so therefore Jesus is the only Son of God. No one else can become a sadhu, a great powerful spiritual leader, a great powerful, you know, spiritual force. Because, you know, we have a different life. We have a life, we, you know, we were, you know, contaminated and degraded, and, you know, so many different, our life is spent in a different way. Therefore, you know, we are different. But Lord Chaitanya is giving a whole different scenario. No, actually, have a look at Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. Haridas Thakur, of course, was born in a Mohammedan family, and he was Namacharya. He was the, you know, principal acharya for teaching the glories of the holy name of the Lord. So he was born in a Muslim family. And the Hindus may think, oh, you know, well, he's untouchable. He can never be elevated. Not in this lifetime. He can never, you know, guide us in spiritual life. He can never be elevated, and he can never guide others. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said no. In this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, along with his eternal associates, their pastimes, their history is very, very important, because it reveals to us that any person from any walk of life, no matter how fallen, degraded, no matter what their background, no matter what their birth, they can be elevated to the topmost position in this lifetime and become fit to become the guru of the whole world and be fit to go back to the spiritual world. That is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message and the teachings through, you know, Rupa, Sanatana Goswami. And also we see that in order to serve the Lord, sometimes you know, one has to be duplicitous, diplomatic, from the ordinary stance of the moralist. They have to stray from the path of ordinary religious morality. We see here, we're reading how for Sanatana Goswami to escape from jail so that he could actually join Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, he had to bribe the prison guard, and he had to tell him different, you know, spin a few untruths. So one may accuse that, you know, here is you know, Sanatana Goswami, he is our acharya. How is he fit to be the acharya when, you know, he's using, he's straying from the path of virtue, straying from the path of truthfulness. So we see also, there was another example with Raghunath Das Goswami, that when his uncle brought the Muslim ruler, thought that Raghunath Das Goswami's uncle had been, who was a tax collector for the Muslim government, that he had been keeping too much for himself, he thought. So they came to arrest him, to take him away. And when they asked Raghunath you know, where is your uncle? he, you know, although he knew where he was, he didn't tell them, oh, I don't know where they are. So he, again, even Raghunath Das Goswami, protected his uncles, who are actually great devotees of the Lord. In this way, we see that not only was their background, you know, somewhat could be considered, you know, degraded, and their irreligious activities, but even in their coming to Krishna consciousness, there are activities which would seem to be, you know, breaking the principles of morality and virtue. But in order to become Krishna conscious, that was actually considered acceptable. We see also in the Mahabharata that there are many instances where Krishna once said to Yudhisthira that the scriptures state, actually what happened was that Yudhisthira was trying to enrage Arjuna so that he would go out and defeat Karna, who was undefeatable. And Arjuna was a little apprehensive, and Yudhisthira had actually been beaten by Karna, and he had to retreat from the battlefield. This is the last couple of days. And Arjuna went to see if he'd been killed, because he knew he was severely wounded. But of course, when Yudhisthira got there, he was thinking, why aren't you out in that battlefield? You're just a bit worried about Karna. So he severely criticised him as a coward and what have you. And told him to, you have to put down your Gandiva bow. Because you may as well put it aside, you're not going to fight. So Arjuna had actually made a vow that anyone who ever tells me to put down my bow, Gandiva bow, I will immediately kill them. And such was his vow. He was so determined that no one would ever make him drop his, bow as a great chacha and hear his brother. So the Pandavas were so strict in truth that, if they spoke something, if they said a vow, I'm going to do this, if they didn't do it, they were going to kill themselves. That was it. They would just, they would not tolerate themselves telling an untruth. So he actually pulled out his sword that he was going to kill Yudhisthira. Because Yudhisthira made him really angry as well. And this was the last couple of days of the battle. They were just, on end. And so of course Krishna stopped him, but Arjuna, he was thinking, so what will I do? Krishna actually said, what is the purpose of morality? What is the purpose of truthfulness? The very purpose of morals and truthfulness and virtues is to protect other living entities from harm. So here, in the name of virtue, in the name of truthfulness, you're about to kill your own brother. So the very purpose of having morality is defeated, so it has no value. You're maintaining a truth for the sake of truth, but there's no value in it, because the very purpose of morality, the very purpose of truth, is that other living entities shall be protected and their rights shall be protected. And here you're about to slay your own brother. And then he said that actually the scriptures state that under certain circumstances, when someone's life is actually jeopardized, an untruth can become a truth, and a truth can become an untruth. And then he explained different examples of that. So which is very interesting, because we see here that Sanatana Goswami and Raghunath Goswami, that they employed, in order to become Krishna conscious and in order to take up Krishna consciousness, the movement, and to just push it on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were some concessions, in the in very, very dire, dangerous situations. We see how this same principle, that when Srila Prabhupada, in the early days, because when the devotees were distributing books, the history of it, by hook or by crook, distributed the book, and there's a lot of hook, and devotees were very tricky. And there was a huge, unfavorable attitude, and even among the devotees themselves, they found it very, very difficult, to understand, how, because in those days the men would have to, disguise themselves in order to sell a book in the early days, because people hated the Hare Krishna movement. And not only hated, they used to like to, abuse them, in whatever way they could, and, try to prevent the Hare Krishna movement from existing in any way possible. So, in order to sell someone a book, it's not like today, you know, you go out and you stand in the street, you know, people come and buy. In those days, you had to disguise yourself. Actually, here, around here, you couldn't actually rent a place around here. When I came to Melbourne in the early 78, and after I became a Grihastha, you could not go out and rent a place. They hated the Hare Krishnas. And if they knew you were Hare Krishna, they would not rent you a place. I remember I rented a place, and I knew I had to disguise myself. I had to put a wig on, and, you know, took my beads off. Yeah. And I still have my old Sankirtan wig. It's a bit silly. But, you know, I went and knocked and had to make sure I didn't smell like incense, you know. Went and, you know, went to the estate agent and, you know, sort of put on an Australian accent, which is not difficult for me. But a bit of an Aussie, you know. Here you go, mate, yeah. Looking for a place to rent, you know. What you've got. So anyway, they gave me a place, and somehow or another, the owner found out that we were Haris. Now, when we moved in, because Hare Krishnas are very clean, I spent 3 or 4 days absolutely cleaning the place up. I went over everything, really, you know, because I didn't want to live in a place where non-devotees, in one sense, are very unclean, you know. And many of them, not all of them, like a stereotype. But devotees are certainly known for their cleanliness. Anyway, the owner come round after, you know, a few days, banging on the door. You know, I answered the door. You, Hare Krishnas, you get out of here, like this. I said, well, what have I done? He said, you live like animals. I said, I've just cleaned your place. I showed him the rug up the hall. I said, I've taken your rug and, you know, cleaned everything. You know. You're like animals, you know, and you stink in my house, you know, like this, because of the incense and that. So the incense to them was stinking out his house. So I said, I'm not going. I've paid my lease, and you can't do this. Anyway, we didn't have much furniture. I don't think we had any. But my partner and I were sleeping in the front room on the floor. And one night, you know, a few days later, middle of the night, brick comes flying through the window, smash, glasses everywhere. You know, and brick lands right next to us. I thought, oh my God, you know, people found out about Hare Krishnas. If the landlord sees this, he's already thinks I'm living like an animal and, you know, stinking his house out now. He's going to come around and see this broken window. So, you know, I went and got someone to fix it as soon as possible. You know, this, got the window fixed. And thought, oh, you know. And a few nights later, another brick. Because, you know, we'd careful to move ourselves just in case. Another brick comes through the window. And this time, I noticed the car. And, you know, this is Port Melbourne. It's a very small place. I went looking for that car. And I found it at this pub. And it belonged to the owner. And the owner was the owner of the house. So the owner of the house, then I realised the owner of the house himself was throwing bricks through our window. So, you know, just let alone, now you're going to sell this guy a book. You know, how are you going to sell this guy a book? You can't even live in their house, even if you clean it up for them and give them money. And then you've got to walk out and try and sell them a book. And then someone will say, And these are the same people, dishonest, violent, and they will accuse, oh, you Hare Krishnas, you wear a wig when you sell books. You horrible people. We can throw bricks through your window, kick you out of the house, you wear a wig to sell a book, and you're a rascal. And the same, you know, the Mohammedan, you know, he's off killing with his troops, this, that and the other. Sanatan tells a little lie to get out of jail. Everyone will condemn, you know, oh, what is this saintly person? So, therefore, you know, the details of the life of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has purposely guided them to perform pastimes so that people in Kali Yuga can take, you know, example that, yes, just as Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami and Haridasa Thakur, they came from this background and they did all these particular activities and became gradually, you know, great devotees of the Lord by taking shelter. In the same way, this, you know, I can relate to everything there and I can also, you know, follow in their footsteps and also become... So Srila Prabhupada used to challenge. You know, he would go to a city and he would say, you know, our Krishna consciousness movement can take anyone from anywhere and make them a first class devotee. I dare anyone to challenge this movement. Bring your philosophers, bring your scientists, I challenge you. You know, I did. So, this is, you know, similarly here we see in this, you know, Avanti Brahmana, of course, that, you know, he has fallen from his brahminical position, but gradually, due to circumstances, that whatever piety, there's the tiniest little trace of spiritual piety from a previous life, of a desire for, you know, advancement on the spiritual path. And although all his material piety finished, and therefore he began to suffer, that little trace of spiritual piety is never lost. And that was all that remained. And therefore his desire to serve the Lord gradually become manifest. And then, you know, we see that all around the world, although people don't have material piety in the age of Kali, not very much, but still there are many, many devotees, actually, in all sorts of different families, and they appear to be in very, very degraded or fallen circumstances. But that piety that somewhere in their previous life they've earned the merit that they can have the intelligence to take up the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that will kick in. And when it does kick in and the devotees fan that flame of that, you know, small desire, then those persons can become elevated, and that they can become elevated to the point where they can become, you know, gurus, you know, of the whole world. You know, if we look at many of our gurus and you look at, you know, their previous position, you could never imagine in a million years for many of them that, oh, he will become, you know, the great Vaishnava travelling all over the world preaching Krishna consciousness. They come from all sorts of backgrounds. You know? And, you know, so that is... And we should always be very careful, of course, in our movement, that we don't miss this understanding that somehow, you know, this one is guru, you know, there's someone, in one sense, you know, certainly their spiritual personalities, having become a guru, they're as worshipable as Lord Sri Krishna. But it's not that anyone else cannot come to that platform. That we have to be careful of. You know, what happens in, you know, in other religions can actually happen. And at certain stages of ISKCON, that sort of mentality is there. You know, one of the problems with the, is it the, it's a, it starts with a V, is it? It's sort of a side shoot from ISKCON, okay. Where they believe that Prabhupada is the only guru. Is it? Ritvik, the Ritviks. Right? As far as they're concerned, Prabhupada is the only guru, and no one else can take that position, you see. And it comes from this exact misunderstanding. Therefore, they, although they've never been initiated by Prabhupada, they consider that they can only take shelter of Prabhupada, they cannot take shelter of anyone else. So it's these sort of misconceptions that can infiltrate and cause, you know, a whole movement of people who cannot have faith in our current gurus for these same misconceptions. It's very, although it's a small philosophical point in one sense, it can lead to absolute disaster where an entire spiritual movement can be ultimately rendered useless by misunderstanding Lord Chaitanya's principle that anyone, any person, no matter what background, can be elevated to become a Nitya Siddha devotee of the Lord and go back to the spiritual world and associate with the other Nitya Siddhas. That is the principle of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And all of that arises by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and studying, you know, the different literatures left by the Goswamis of Vrindavan. So if anyone has any questions or comments. Ah, they eventually kicked me out. Well, in the early part of the class I was saying that Krishna or Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they bring with them the Nitya Siddha devotees to enact these pastimes with the Lord who comes, you know, himself. So to just immediately join in the association of the Lord when he comes takes, you know, some qualification. But and literally to, you know, understand his mission. You know, we Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapatam Jena Bhutale Swam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swavatam Tikam. We offer our obeisances under Rupa Goswami because he understood the Lord's mission and completely, you know, he understood the intimate, you know, workings of the Lord's mind. You know, and he surrendered completely that, you know, what is the Lord's desire, I will establish that. When Rupa Goswami went to Vrindavan, basically there were paddy fields. And Lord Chaitanya sent them, I want you to establish the temples of Vrindavan and all the lost places. So now you go to Vrindavan, look what Rupa Goswami did. An ordinary person that may not have had that, you know, transcendental purity, they also come into contact with Lord Chaitanya's movement and they were delivered by the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So ordinary living entities were delivered, and many of those who were delivered 500 years ago then, you know, in successive births also followed and, you know, become great pure devotees of the Lord and gradually went back to Godhead. But immediately for a conditioned soul who's averse to serving the Lord, you know, and therefore cannot understand his confidential mission, it's very difficult for them to you know, do what Rupa Goswami did. So therefore the Lord, you know, he has his trusted eternal associates that you know, they are one with the Lord's desire in his pastimes, and therefore they help him to establish, you know, the Lord's movement. But having become purified by the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra associated with devotees, gradually others come to that same position of being an associate of the Lord, and then they also take birth in a universe where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is inaugurating his Sankirtan movement, and they will assist, just like Rupa Goswami and so many others, the Lord in establishing his Sankirtan movement. So that will happen in time, but not immediately, because they're so conditioned. You know, I think I heard one Swami saying, you know, in this lifetime, you know, just very genuine, in this lifetime you hear the devotees chanting, and the next lifetime you're, you know, leading the kirtan. You know, next lifetime, you know, you're training up all the kirtan leaders to spread Krishna consciousness over the world. He was sort of giving a general scenario like this, you know. So, you know, in the beginning, some may come and, you know, got practically no pious credit. Just by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, he just delivers them through the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And then, you know, after some purification, perhaps in the next lifetime, they can also join in and associate with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his, you know, in a universe somewhere, in establishing that, you know, his movement like that. So they can also become Nitya Siddha devotees and assist the Lord to establish Sankirtan, you know, sometime. Otherwise, they you know, they may just go directly back to the spiritual world. So, you know, there are, again, to give another example, there are many devotees in this Krishna consciousness movement who, though not, will never become gurus or spiritual masters in one sense in this lifetime, but who in the next life will actually be powerful acharyas preaching Krishna consciousness somewhere. You know. So there is a progression. And those gurus then gradually become associates of the Lord, who preach in the association of the Lord directly. Any other comments or questions? I think everyone's hungry. Jai, all good, Srila Prabhupada.